those words deep in her soul. On Monday morning, Persephone sat between Laoce and Sybil at the coffee house as she pressed publish on her article. She smiled when she read the bold lettering on the landing page of her website, "My Journey Toward Loving the God of the Dead." The two squealed and hugged Persephone. "This is just the beginning," she said. She felt proud, she felt empowered, and she felt free. Persephone left Laoce with a to-do list while she and Sybil gathered their things and headed to their respective workplaces. For Persephone, it was the most excited she'd been in a long time to return to the Acropolis, because she would never be going there again. "Good morning, Helen." The young woman seemed surprised and stammered, "Good morning, Persephone." The goddess walked straight into Dimitri's office. He looked up at her. His tablet glared off his glasses, obscuring his expression. For a moment, neither spoke.
"You quit."
"I quit." They spoke at the same time. Dimitri smiled, and that alarmed her.
"Can't say that I am surprised. I saw your announcement. You recruited every single news outlet,"
he said and sat back in his chair. He seemed sincere when he said,
"Congrats."
"Thank you," she replied.
"The Advocate," he said. "Fitting. Will you continue to write about gods?"
She lifted her chin. She knew what he wanted to ask. "Will you write about me?" "If it's an injustice, I will expose it," she said. She had promised she would dismantle Kahl and unravel Dimitri, and gods were bound to keep promises. He nodded.
"Then I wish you all the best."
Persephone left Dimitri's office and walked straight to her desk, emptying everything she'd brought into a box.
"Where are you going?"
Helen asked, looking up from the desk as she headed to the elevator. She smiled at the young blonde. "I quit, Helen."
"Take me with you."
Persephone's eyes widened.
"Helen, I'll work for you for free," she said. "Please, Persephone, I don't want to stay without you."
When the elevator doors opened, she smiled. "Come on." Helen squealed, grabbed her purse, and joined Persephone in the elevator. When they made it to the first floor, Persephone handed the box to Helen. "Will you wait for me? I have to say goodbye to someone."
"Oh, sure," she said.
Persephone headed to the basement in search of Pirithous. She found his office empty. Glancing over his desk, amid stacks of work orders and tools, she spotted a notebook. She recalled the day she'd startled him in his office to ask if he could help her escape again, and how protective he'd seemed of the information inside. And yet, it lay open, tiny handwriting scribbled across the pages. She might have left it unread had she not spotted her name on the page. Curiosity overwhelmed her, and she began to read.
Date, 7/2. She wore a white shirt and a black and white striped skirt today. Hair up. The shirt was cut low, and I could see the swell of her breasts as she breathed.
Persephone's blood ran cold.
What the fuck was this?
She turned a page. There was a new description of her outfit for the next day, a pink-fitted dress and white heels.
Her legs are shapely. I found myself wanting to lift her skirt, spread her wide, and fuck her. She would let me.
Further down, he wrote,
there was another report about her in Hades in the news today. Every single fucking day, someone is reminding me she is with him. She won't love him long. He is a god, and they destroy everything they love. I will make sure of that.
Then she found the list.
Duct tape, rope, sleeping pills, condoms.
Persephone felt something sour in the back of her throat. That day she'd interrupted Pirithous when he'd seemed so nervous. He'd been working on a list.
What are you doing?
Persephone jerked her hand away from the journal as her head snapped toward the door where Pirithous now stood, blocking her exit. His eyes were steely and made her blood run cold. She opened her mouth to speak but couldn't find words. Her heart was beating out of her chest,
and a thin sheen of sweat beaded on her forehead. "Pirithous," she breathed. "I came to say goodbye."
"Really?"
he asked.
"Because it looked like you were snooping."
"No," she whispered, shaking her head. There was a brief moment where neither of them spoke, and then Persephone reached for the closest, heaviest object, a flashlight sitting on Pirithous' desk. She threw it at his head, and as he dodged the blow, she attempted to rush past him, but he reached for her, his nails digging into her skin. "Let me go," she screamed. Her magic rushed forth, and vines sprouted around them. Persephone barely had time to register her shock before Pirithous spoke.
"Sleep."
Persephone obeyed, falling into darkness. When she woke, she felt as if she'd been drugged. Her vision was blurry, her head hurt, and her mouth was stuffed with a cloth and taped shut. Her hands were bound behind her back, and she sat in a hard wooden chair that cut into her arms. Persephone immediately tried to free herself, but the knot grew tighter. Soon she became frantic, rocking the chair back and forth. Then she caught sight of her surroundings and froze. There were pictures and newspaper clippings of her everywhere. Photos taken as she walked down the street, ran errands, and had lunch with her friends. Photos of her at her home, in her pajamas, and sleeping. The images were a log of her daily life. She felt sick and frantic.
"You're awake."
Pirithous came into view. Persephone screamed, though her cries were muffled, and tears spilled down her cheeks.
"Stop, stop, stop,"
he commanded. He reached forward and pulled the tape and gag from her mouth.
"It is all right, my love. I won't hurt you."
"Don't call me that," she snapped. Pirithous' jaw tightened.
"It is no matter," he said. "You will love me."
"Fuck you," Persephone spat. The man shot forward, twining his fingers into her hair and pulling her head back. When she met his gaze, she noticed the color of his irises had changed from black to gold. "You're a demigod?" A wicked smile cut across his face.
"Son of Zeus."
"Oh, gods, no wonder you're such a fucking creep." He jerked her hair harder, and Persephone yelped, arching to lessen the tension. "Ungrateful," he hissed.
"I've been protecting you."
"You're hurting me."
"You think this is pain?" he asked, but he released her. "Pain is watching the woman you love fall for someone else."
Persephone didn't speak. She was afraid. Her magic welled inside her, but she didn't know how to use it. Her wrists were bound, and she had only ever channeled her power with her hands. Even then, the best she could do was restrain Pirithous, which could backfire since she was unaware of his power. "Pirithous, you don't know me. How could you love me?"
"I love you. Haven't I shown it? The hearts, the notes, the flower?"
"That's not love. If you loved me, you wouldn't have brought me here."
"I brought you here because I love you, don't you see? There are people who want to tear us apart."
"Like Hades? I assure you, he will tear you apart."
"Don't say his name."
"Hades will find me." Pirithous moved toward her threateningly, and she squeezed her eyes shut. When he didn't touch her, she opened her eyes and found him glaring down at her.
"Why him?"
Persephone searched for an answer, one that would appease him, that would make him go away. "Because the fates command it," she answered. He paled, and for a moment she thought she might have succeeded, but then he gritted his teeth and hissed,
"You're lying."
He knelt before her.
"Why him? Is it the sex?"
Persephone tensed, squeezing her legs together as Pirithous placed his hands on either side of the chair.
"Tell me what he does that you like. I can do better."
"Don't fucking touch me!" Persephone screamed, and tried to shuffle away from him, but her heels wouldn't grip the floor. Pirithous' fingers dug into her skin, and he pried her legs apart. "No!"
"You'll like it, I promise. You won't even think about him when I am finished."
"No, she would only wish to die." "I said no!" She screamed, and thorns erupted around her from the ground. They created a cage, protecting Persephone from Pirithous' advances, cutting him in the process. He screamed,
"You won't keep me from you!"
At first, he clawed at the wood, trying to break the branches with his bare hands. When that didn't work, he disappeared and returned with a knife, driving it through the thorn barrier. Persephone screamed, and the thorns thickened until they exploded in shards and splinters. Pirithous was blown back. He landed against the wall. His body sagged to the ground. A massive stake speared his chest. He was dead. Persephone screamed,
"Help! Somebody help me, please!"
She sobbed,
"Hades!"
She struggled to free herself until her gaze caught something looming overhead. "Furies," Persephone whispered, breathing hard from her frantic effort. The goddesses floated. Their pale bodies seemed to glow in the dark. "Bride of Hades," their voices echoed. "You are safe now." Smoke coiled in the air, and all at once Hades appeared in his divine form. Huge and imposing, he towered over her, a void of black. His eyes, fierce and furious, met hers before he whirled toward the lifeless Pirithous. Suddenly, there was a gasping sound as he brought the demigod back to life. He began to breathe hard, a strange whining coming from his throat. He didn't speak, but his eyes grew wide when he saw Hades.
"I brought you back to life," Hades said, "so I can tell you that I will enjoy torturing you for the rest of your eternal life."
He didn't seem lucid enough to register what Hades was saying, but the god continued anyway.
"In fact, I think I will keep you alive so you can ruminate in your pain."
He snapped his fingers, and a pit opened beneath Pirithous' feet. His screams were shrill as he fell into the underworld. Hades turned to Persephone, and with a wave of his hand, her bonds were broken. She fell into Hades as he approached, and he gathered her into his arms and turned to the Furies.
"Alecto, Magira, Tisiphone, Ceta Pirithous."
They bowed their heads. The Furies vanished, and Hades teleported to the underworld. It was in his bedchamber that she fell apart. Hades sat with her cradled against him, soothing her with whispered words until her tears were dry, until she no longer felt like she was imploding on the inside. Finally, she pulled away. "Bath," she said. "I need to scrub him from my skin." Hades' mouth hardened, and Persephone felt as though she could see his mind working, deciding on the torture he would inflict upon Pirithous. Despite this, his voice was calm when he spoke.
"Of course."
Hades walked her to the baths, and she shed her clothes and entered the hot water. Steam curled around her, and she inhaled the scent of vanilla and lavender. She scrubbed her skin until it was red and raw. When she was finished, she left the water, wrapping herself in a fluffy white robe. Hades hadn't joined her. He sat some distance from the pool, watching her. She went to him and sat on his lap, wrapping her arms around his neck. She needed his comfort, his closeness.
"Tell me what happened," he said.
And there was an edge to his voice that told her he wasn't ready, that if she spoke of her abduction, she would release the violence within him. "I will tell you if you will promise me one thing," she said. He raised a brow, waiting, and her eyes fell to his lips. "When you torture him, I get to join you."
"That is a promise I can keep."
Chapter 28, A Touch of Ruin. Thanatos accompanied Persephone on her first visit to Elysium.
"You won't be able to talk to her today," he said. "She must become comfortable with Elysium, or she will become overwhelmed."
Persephone had a feeling she knew what that meant. Lexa would have to drink from the Lethe again. That was the last thing she wanted. "When will she be ready?" Persephone asked. Thanatos shrugged.
"It is hard to say."
She knew what Thanatos didn't say.
It depends on how much she must heal. The thought pained her, but she pushed that away. She couldn't think of what she should have done. All she could do was learn from her mistakes. They stopped at the top of a hill in Elysium. Here, Hades' sky was so bright it was almost blinding. Beside her, Thanatos pointed to a figure in the distance, a woman whose black hair ignited like a torch against her white dress. It was Lexa. Tears pricked her eyes as she watched her best friend traverse the field, holding her hand aloft, touching blades of tall grass. And while Persephone couldn't see her face, she knew Lexa felt peace here. Weeks went by, and Persephone visited Elysium every day, watching Lexa from afar, until one day Thanatos approached and said, "It's time." Persephone thought she'd be ready, that she would jump at the chance to be reunited with Lexa. But when Thanatos gave his permission, she suddenly felt nervous and more uncertain than ever. "What if she doesn't like me?" she asked.
"Lexa is the same soul you found in the upper world. She is caring and loving and kind. She is ready for a friend."
Persephone nodded and took a breath. Preparing to approach was like preparing for a public speech. Anxiety whirled within her, making her stomach feel unsettled and tightening her chest. She marched toward Lexa, who sat beneath a tree that was so full of pomegranates it looked like it was on fire. Lexa wore a white dress, and her long black hair spilled over her shoulders. Her head rested on the trunk, and her eyes were closed as if she were sleeping. She looked beautiful and rested, and Persephone was almost afraid to disturb her, afraid that when she opened her eyes, she might not recognize the person behind them. She took a breath. "Hi." Persephone didn't use Lexa's name. Thanatos said she wouldn't remember it anyway. Lexa opened her familiar, blinding blue eyes and met Persephone's gaze. She thought her chest might explode when she smiled at her.
"Hi.
Can I sit with you for a little while?" Persephone asked.
"Yes."
Lexa moved over a little so that Persephone could be seated and use the trunk to lean against.
"You're not dead," Lexa said.
The observation surprised Persephone, and she shook her head. "No, I am not."
"Then why are you here?"
"I am Hades' fiancé," she said. "I visit Elysium often," Lexa giggled.
"I've noticed."
That also surprised her. "Have you?"
"I always notice Thanatos," she said, blushing.
Suddenly, Persephone wondered if souls could have crushes.
"If you are Lord Hades' fiancé, then you will be queen."
"I suppose I will."
"Then you will have a crown and a throne," she said. Persephone laughed. It was such a Lexa thing to say.
"I already have two crowns." Lexa's eyes widened a little.
"You must bring them," she said. "I have always wanted to wear a crown."
Persephone's brows knitted together.
"Since when?"
She shrugged.
"Since I came here. Will there be a wedding?"
Persephone sighed. "Yes, but I must admit I haven't thought much about planning." Between Lexa's death and her abduction, things had been a little hectic.
"You will be a beautiful bride," Lexa said. "A beautiful queen."
Persephone blushed. "Thank you." Their conversation continued well into the afternoon. She probably would have stayed longer, but Hecate appeared and summoned her away. "I must go," Persephone said, rising to her feet. "I have to get ready."
"Ready for what?"
"There is a gala tonight," she said, and then grinned. "You would love it. There will be gods and goddesses, pretty dresses, and dancing." She would love it because it was the event she'd been working on before her accident, an advocacy dinner for the Halcyon Project, and it was being hosted at the Olympian, one of Hera's hotels, a building Lexa had always admired for its beauty and architecture, and because it was where most gods stayed when they visited New Athens.
"You must come back and tell me all about it," Lexa answered.
Persephone smiled. "Of course.
I'll be back tomorrow.
When Persephone returned to the palace, Hecate and her lamp aides helped her dress. Hecate had chosen a red, off-the-shoulder gown. The top was lace, and the skirt was full, and made of layers and layers of tulle. Persephone loved the silhouette. It made her feel like a princess. The lamp aides smoothed her hair into soft, glamorous curls and applied natural makeup.
"We will let your beauty speak for itself,"
Hecate said, looking at Persephone's reflection as the goddess helped her accessorize with gold jewels and shoes. She smiled. "Thank you, Hecate."
"Of course, my dear."
Hecate left when Hades appeared. He stayed near the door, admiring her from afar. He was dressed in a tailored black suit, his signature color. His hair was slicked back and his beard shaved close. He was handsome and regal, and he belonged to her. That thought sent a wave of warmth through her.
"You look lovely," he said.
"Thank you," she said, smiling. "So do you. I mean, you look handsome." He chuckled and extended his hand.
"Shall we?"
He drew her flesh against him, wrapping a hand around her waist as he teleported to the surface where Antony waited for them outside Nevernight. As Persephone slid into the backseat of Hades' limo, she laughed.
"And what is so amusing?"
"You know we could just teleport to the Olympian."
"I thought you wanted to live a mortal existence when in the upper world," Hades countered.
"Perhaps I am only eager to begin our night together," she said, looking at him through her lashes. The tension in the cabin thickened, and Hades' eyes glittered.
"Why wait?"
he asked. She moved first, grabbing layers of her dress so she could straddle him.
"Who chose this dress?"
Hades asked, pushing aside the mountain of tulle that bloomed between them. "You don't like it?" she pouted.
"I'd really rather have access to your body," Hades said.
"Are you asking me to dress for sex?" Hades smirked.
"It will be our secret."
They kissed, and Persephone's hands drifted down Hades' chest to the waistband of his slacks. She unbuttoned them and freed his sex, stroking him as her tongue explored his mouth. He groaned, and Persephone's lips left his to trail down his jaw and neck.
"I need you," he growled. "Now."
He was hard as a rock, and Persephone's breath caught in her throat, anticipating how he would feel inside her. She lifted herself, guiding his cock to her entrance, and sank onto him. They groaned and rocked together in the dark of the limo.
"You have ruined me," Hades said. "This is all I ever think about."
"Sex?" she laughed, holding him close, loving the feel of his breath on her skin as he spoke.
"You," he said.
His hands moved up beneath her dress until he held her hips.
"Being inside you, the feel of you gripping my cock, the way you tighten around me just before you come."
She shivered. "You just described sex, Hades."
"I described sex with you," he said. "There is a difference."
She melted against him, and their lips slammed together, tongue stroking. Pleasure rippled through her, holding Hades as if she might fall apart, rising and falling on him.
"Fuck, fuck, fuck,"
Hades cursed as she moved, and the sounds of their lovemaking filled the small space. Hades' hips thrust upward, meeting her movements with furious speed. She gave a guttural cry, her fingers twisting into his hair. "Come for me," Persephone whispered.
"My darling," Hades said.
His fingers pressed into her skin hard, and he came inside her in a gush of warmth. Persephone collapsed against him, breathing hard, their skin slick with sweat. Her legs shook, and she felt like she was floating. He groaned.
"Fuck me," he muttered. "I'm like a fucking teenager."
She laughed. "Do you even know what it's like to be a teenager?"
"No,"
he answered.
"But I imagine they're always horny and never quite sated."
Hades was still inside her,
hard, wet, and ready for more. "Perhaps I can help," she said, and lifted herself from him. She started to slide to her knees, intending to take him into her mouth, when he stopped her.
"No, darling."
Persephone frowned.
"But trust that there is nothing I would love more than for you to go down on me. But for now, we must attend this God's forsaken dinner."
"Must we?" she asked.
"Yes,"
he said, pressing his finger beneath her chin.
"Trust me, you will not want to miss it."
She wasn't so sure, but she held his gaze as she rose and sat beside him, adjusting the layers of her skirt. She watched as Hades tried to hide his aroused flesh. It almost made her laugh, until he glanced at her, and a sound erupted from somewhere deep in his chest.
"Goddess."
It was a warning, and her whole body began to feel warm again. She smiled and looked out the window. Immediately jolted from her reverie when she noticed the sea of mortals outside the car. The crowd seemed to go on for miles, and they were packed together, standing as close to the car as possible. It probably shouldn't have surprised her, given her experience at the Olympian Gala, but she had attended as a journalist then. This time she was Hades' fiancé. She inhaled sharply. Anxiety gripped her. She wasn't sure she'd ever get used to this. The car came to a stop, and the door opened. Immediately, her vision was filled with flashing lights. Hades exited the car to a roar of adoration. They called his name, begged him to take them to the underworld, begged to see him in divine form. He ignored the cries and turned, holding his hand out for her. She took a deep breath, steeling herself.
"Darling."
The word comforted her, and she slipped her fingers into his palm, and when he closed his strong hand around hers, it gave her the reassurance she needed to leave the cabin of the limo. When she rose to her full height beside Hades, there was chaos. The lights flashed faster, a machine gun of white light blasted her vision. With their fingers laced, they began their walk down the swath of red carpet that led to the front of the Olympian, a grand hotel that looked like a golden wall of reflective metal. Persephone was surprised when Zophie joined them, dressed in the blue gown she'd forced her to buy for events like tonight.
"Zophie!"
Persephone pulled the Amazon in for a hug. She stiffened.
"Persephone, are you well?"
"Yes," she answered. "Just happy to see you." The Amazon smiled. Now and then, they were directed to a spot to pose for pictures. Hades obliged, pulling Persephone against him and slipping an arm around her. At one point, she swore she felt his lips touch her hair. They were funneled into a reception hall with a ceiling made of glass-blown flowers. Persephone spent several minutes with her neck craned, staring at the display. But she was soon interrupted by numerous people who approached to greet her. Some were strangers, some were high-ranking criminals and members of Iniquity, but a few were Persephone's friends.
"Sybil!"
She hadn't seen her friend and ex-roommate since they'd moved out of their apartment a week ago. She hugged the oracle tight. The blonde wore a sparkling, champagne-colored gown.
"You look beautiful!"
"Thank you, as do you," Sybil said. "How are you doing?"
"Good.
Great," Persephone said. She couldn't stop smiling.
"How's Arrow?"
Sybil blushed. "Good. We're good." Persephone let out a small yelp when Hermes appeared, scooping her up into a tight hug. When he set her on her feet, it was in front of Apollo, who smirked when he saw her.
"So, Seffy," Hermes said, wagging his brows. "I hear Hades put a ring on it."
She laughed. "Well, not literally." The god of trickery gasped.
"What the fuck? You can't be engaged without a ring, Seffy."
"That's not true at all, Hermes."
"Says who? I wouldn't have said yes until I saw the rock."
She rolled her eyes.
"Congrats, Seth,"
Apollo said, and Persephone grinned at him. They were directed into the dining room shortly after, and Persephone sat at a table at the front of the room between Hades and Sybil.
Despite the excitement of the evening and seeing her friends again, Persephone couldn't help thinking about Lexa. She could see her in parts of the event, in the wine lists, the music, the decor. Everything was glamorous and dramatic, just the way she liked it. She felt her absence acutely. Well into dinner, Katerina, the director of the Cyprus Foundation, stood and welcomed the crowd. She offered an overview of the Halcyon project and then turned over the remainder of the presentation to Sybil.
"I am new to the Cyprus Foundation," she said, "but I fill a very special position, one that was once occupied by my friend Lexa Sideris. Lexa was a beautiful person, a bright spirit, a light to all. She lived the values of the Halcyon project, which is why we at the Cyprus Foundation have decided to immortalize her. Introducing the Lexa Sideris Memorial Garden." Persephone gasped, and Hades gripped her hand beneath the table. On the screen behind Sybil were sketches of the garden, a beautifully landscaped oasis. "The Lexa Sideris Memorial Garden will be a therapy garden for residents of Halcyon," Sybil explained, jumping into an overview of the meaning behind each part of the garden, explaining that the nightshades paid homage to her love of Hecate, and the gorgeous glass-like sculpture at the garden center represented Lexa's soul, a bright and burning torch that kept everyone going. Persephone's heart was so full. Hades leaned in and whispered against her ear,
"Are you well?"
"Yes," she whispered, swallowing hard. "Perfect." After dinner, they gathered in the ballroom. Hades pulled Persephone onto the dance floor, drawing her close. One hand rested on the curve of her back, the other held her hand. He guided her along the floor with grace and confidence. And though he was a perfect gentleman, there was something sensual in the way their bodies formed to one another. Warmth swelled in the bottom of Persephone's stomach, and she couldn't take her eyes from his.
"When did you plan the garden?" she asked.
"The night Lexa died."
Persephone shook her head, biting her lip.
"What are you thinking?"
Hades asked. "I am thinking about how much I love you," she answered. Hades grinned. It was a beautiful smile, and she felt it deep in her chest. After that, the music spiraled into something more electronic, and Hades took his leave, encouraging her to dance with Sybil, glowering when Hermes and Apollo joined in. She spent a while with them, laughing and joking, and feeling better than she had in a long time. At some point, she went in search of Hades, and found herself outside on a balcony that overlooked the whole of New Athens. From here, she could see all the places that had changed her life over the last 4 years. The university, the Acropolis, Nevernight. She wasn't there long when Hades approached.
"There you are."
He drew his arms around her waist and pulled her against him.
"What are you doing out here?"
"Breathing," she said. He chuckled, and the sound sent shivers down her spine. He pressed a kiss to her cheek, squeezing her tight.
"I have something for you,"
Hades said, and Persephone turned in his arms.
"What is it?" she asked, a smile on her face. She had never been so happy.
Hades studied her for a moment, and she wondered if he was thinking the same thing. Then he reached into his pocket and knelt before her.
"Hades," she wanted to protest. They had already done this. They were engaged. She didn't need a ring or a formal proposal.
"Just let me do this," he said,
and the smile on his face made her chest swell.
"Please."
Hades opened a small black box, revealing a gold ring. It was both ridiculous and beautiful, encrusted with diamonds and gold flowers. It matched the crown Ian had made for her. She gaped at it for a moment before shifting her gaze to Hades.
"Persephone, I would have chosen you 1,000 times over. The fates be damned," he said, laughing. "Please, become my wife. Rule beside me. Let me love you forever."
Tears sprung to her eyes, and she offered a shaky smile. "Of course," she whispered. "Forever." Hades' smile grew, showing his teeth. It was one of her favorite smiles, the one she liked to imagine was only for her. He slipped the ring on her finger and rose to his feet, capturing her mouth in a kiss that she felt in her soul. "You wouldn't have happened to overhear Hermes demand a rock, would you?" she asked when he pulled away. Hades chuckled.
"He might have been talking loud enough for me to hear," he said. "But if you must know, I have had that ring for a while."
"How long?" she demanded.
"Embarrassingly long," he said,
and then admitted,
"since the night of the Olympian gala."
Persephone swallowed a lump that had risen in her throat. How had she gotten so lucky?
"I love you,"
he said, pressing his forehead to hers. "I love you, too." They kissed again. And when he pulled away, she noticed something white swirling around them. It took her a moment to realize that it was snow. Despite its beauty, there was something sinister to the way it fell from the sky. Not to mention, it was August. Persephone looked at Hades. The happiness that had lit his face a moment before was suddenly gone. Now he looked concerned, his dark brows drawing together over severe eyes. "Hades, why is it snowing?" Persephone whispered. He looked down at her, his eyes an endless void, and answered in a solemn tone,
"It's the start of a war."
Bonus content. Chapter 1, The Field of Judgment. Hades allowed his glamour to fall away as he approached Persephone. She stood at the end of the pier, ignited against the muted black of the Styx. She was surrounded by souls from the Asphodel Valley, and they held garlands and dates and chocolates. Gifts, he imagined. Thanatos was here too, his great black wings swept behind him like a cloak. Persephone had rallied them, forming what she referred to as a welcome committee for those who were newly arrived in the underworld. It was a bit of a passion project for her, so he'd let her have it. And he was here now because she'd asked him to be, despite feeling as though he had no place on the banks of the Styx welcoming souls into his realm. There were several reasons for this. Souls who were newly dead were usually desperate to not be dead. Seeing him would only fuel their hope that he might return them to the upper world. Not to mention that some of them did not deserve the welcome or the gift. But when he had said as much, Persephone had just shrugged.
"Think of it as another form of punishment," she said. "You are giving them hope, only to take it away when they face the judges."
That had made him smirk, and he raised a brow.
"That is devious, my darling. Who taught you such things?"
"Hecate," she teased.
Her reasoning had convinced him, and so here he was. He could tell when Persephone sensed him approaching, noting the way she straightened and how her shoulders rose on a shuddering breath. Then she turned, and her beauty speared his chest, made him ache in ways he never thought possible. She wore robes the color of the deep sea, and they set her pale hair aflame like a cold spring sun. Her horns made her appear taller and even more slender than she already was. When she smiled, he wanted to kneel before her and worship at her feet.
"You came."
He smiled at her, ignoring the dark feeling crowding his chest as he recognized the surprise in her voice. He had disappointed her before.
"I wouldn't miss standing beside you," he said.
"They're coming,"
a soul called excitedly. And Persephone turned from him for a moment to observe the rust-colored skiff cutting across the uneven waves, a pale lantern swung haphazardly at the bow. Hades could see Charon, dressed in white robes and crowned in gold, rowing against the angry current. Persephone faced him and held out her hand, excitement alighting her eyes. She was offering him an invitation, knowing how uncomfortable this made him. While she was helping him see that his people valued time and celebration,
A part of him still feared he would see the god he used to be in their gazes. The god who hadn't cared about their existence beyond sentencing them to an eternity of nothing. Hades folded his fingers into hers, and she led him to the front of the crowd.
I do not know what to say,
he admitted quietly as he stood beside her. She gave him a wry look, and he explained,
I am not good with mortals.
You were good with Lexa,
she pointed out, and he noted how she looked away at the mentioning of her best friend's name, probably to hide her pain. Lexa was still in Elysium, and despite Persephone's daily visits and efforts to rebuild their friendship, it had changed, and Persephone mourned what she once had.
Pretend they are all her, she said. How would you say hello?
He thought of the first time he had met Lexa. She had smiled at him, hugged him, and threatened to hate him if he didn't make Persephone happy. She had been described as a bright beacon around which people gathered by her friends. And that was true of her soul. She was light, pure, and kind and good. Knowing how genuine she was made it easier for Hades to speak to her. He was not used to genuine mortals. Charon was close enough now that Hades could see his grin, and as he docked, he called out,
My, what a welcome and blessing! The Lord and Lady of the Underworld have joined us!
Hades felt a sense of pride at hearing Persephone addressed as the Lady of his realm. At first, she'd been hesitant to accept it, because she didn't like titles. Later, she would admit the truth. She was afraid. She felt like the more she was given now, the more she had to lose if anything happened between them again. Hades remembered feeling anger at her doubt, and when he'd expressed his frustration to Hecate, the goddess of witchcraft reminded him that Persephone had every right to feel that way. That is her trauma speaking, Hades. Her mother has taught her that the people she loves will abandon her. Hades gritted his teeth. He would be glad when Persephone was his wife. Any offense Demeter committed against her after that would be considered an act of war against him, and the goddess of harvest was an imbecile if she thought Hades wouldn't bite.
Welcome!
Persephone's charmed voice brought him back to the present, as several souls of varying ages filed off the ferry and onto the wooden pier. Their expressions varied. Some were afraid, others were passive, and some were awed. Expressions weren't always a marker of a person's true feelings, though, and Hades found himself stripping away those false layers to perceive what lay beneath. And there he found terror and hope and innocence. It was the last one that got him. An aura of raw purity that felt like peace and made his chest ache. Hades suddenly found himself searching the flock of souls for the source of that feeling when his eyes landed on a soul he recognized. Rarely did he react without thought, but the pull toward this spirit was immediate. He stepped toward the group, ignoring how they cowered at his approach, because there was one soul who did not fear him. One soul who also recognized him and called out his name, pushing through the others who surrounded him.
Hades!
A child of only 5 years with curly blonde hair, wide brown eyes, and a tear-streaked face ran to him.
Elias!
Hades scooped him up, rising to his full height as Elias buried his head against Hades' neck.
I miss my mommy, he whispered.
I know, he murmured. It will be all right, young one.
He stood, holding the boy for a while, before realizing that the souls, old and new, were staring at him, and so was Thanatos, Charon, and Persephone.
Don't look so surprised, he said to the group. Not everyone fears me.
Persephone's wide eyes softened, her shock melting away. After a moment, she cleared her throat, turning toward the new souls.
We're so glad you're here. I am Persephone, goddess of spring. And this,
she gestured toward him,
is your king. We've come to escort you to the field of judgment.
At the mentioning of judgment, the souls seemed to recover from their surprise of seeing Hades embrace a child,
and they began to shake.
"Do not be alarmed," Persephone said. "The walk is pleasant and beautiful. You'll see. Thanatos, will you lead us?"
The winged god of death smiled at her, and Hades could feel his magic working to calm the souls. "Of course, my lady." While Thanatos' magic was a comfort to many, and seen as a way to calm fear, it also kept souls obedient and prevented them from bolting across the underworld in an attempt to escape judgment. It was one reason Hades insisted that if Persephone was to keep her welcome committee, Thanatos would have to attend. Luckily, the god had been more than willing to serve. Thanatos took the lead, and as they walked the dark stone path toward the judges, Hades felt Persephone's gaze upon him.
"Don't know how to talk to mortals, huh?" she asked, raising a curious brow. Hades offered a small smile.
"Elias and I are not strangers."
"I see that," she said. "Won't you tell me?"
It took him a moment to respond, not because he didn't want to, but because he wanted to ensure Elias was asleep. He had been through a lot, and hearing Hades tell his story would not only make the child miss his mother more, but relive the pain he had been through. "Elias and I met at Epione Children's Hospital. I donate annually to their Foundation for Cancer Research. I requested a tour so that I could understand the impact of the funds. Were they helping? What did they need? Elias was one of the children going through a new clinical trial for a brain tumor."
"He seems to love you very much," Persephone said quietly.
Hades cleared his throat. "I spent a lot of time playing with him. Goldfish."
He looked at Persephone, unable to discern the odd expression on her face.
Maybe she didn't know what goldfish was, he thought, so he started to explain. "It is a card game where..."
"I know what goldfish is, Hades," she interrupted him. "I live in the mortal world, remember?" He chuckled a little.
"Of course," he said, and paused, glancing down at the child's curly head of hair. He was snoring quietly now. "He beat me every time." They were quiet for the rest of the walk. Unlike the souls who chatted with each other, sharing of their existence in the underworld, speaking of their homes, markets, and celebrations.
"We are very lucky to have such a caring ruler," Hades heard one say.
"And soon we will have two," another added. "Lord Hades and Lady Persephone are to wed." Hearing their excitement pleased Hades and surprised him. He knew there were souls and monsters in his realm who did not wish him the happiness of a loving marriage. They wanted him to suffer as he had made them suffer. It was one reason he'd reacted with such fury when Persephone had gotten lost and fallen asleep on a walk in the underworld. He hadn't been able to sense her, and had been convinced someone had taken their revenge. It was one reason he continuously morphed the underworld, changing paths and forests, meadows and mountains, to make it harder for souls to explore and remember roots. He sounded paranoid, but not everyone who wished him ill was sentenced to an eternity in Tartarus. Elias stirred in Hades' arms, and the god peered down at him. The child looked sleepy, his face red from where he had rested his face against Hades' shoulder.
"Where are we?"
he asked. "We're going to meet some friends," Hades replied, fearing the word judges would ignite fear. As he spoke, they crested a hill, and the souls stopped. There were a few gasps, while others verbalized their awe. "It is beautiful." The field of judgment was paved in gold, and the three judges, Aeacus, Minos, and Rhadamanthus, were giants who sat upon gilded thrones. The Styx created a barrier between the souls and the judges, and a bridge allowed access for only one to approach at a time. Aeacus sat on the left, a crimson cloak and hood swallowing his massive frame, keeping all but his lips shadowed from view. Minos sat on the right, the youngest of his brothers and beardless. His hair was long and brown, and he kept half of it pulled away from his face. Rhadamanthus sat in the center. His long white beard spilled into his lap. He
He wore brown, and his large hands rested upon the arms of his throne, spotted brown with age. "I am afraid this is where we must leave you all," Thanatos said, "but only for a short while. Before long, you will know your place in the underworld." The new souls lined up at Thanatos' instruction, while the others were teleported back to Asphodel, where they would prepare a feast. Persephone and Hades remained, watching as the judges sentenced. Dread pooled in Hades' stomach, and he erected a barrier around Elias so he would not have to hear the worst parts of the judges' sentences. There were a few among this group, a murderer and a sex offender, who were assigned to Tartarus and wailed in an unnatural way before they vanished. Even Persephone shivered, drawing nearer to him for comfort. Soon, they were the only ones who remained. Hades did not cross the bridge toward the judges, remaining beside Persephone with Elias in his arms. "My lord," the three took their time addressing him, never speaking in unison. Then they looked upon Persephone and nodded.
"My lady."
"I see you have brought Elias," Rhadamanthus said.
"A personal escort," observed Aeacus.
"This child is special," Minos said.
"He is my friend," Hades replied.
"I would like to take him to his new home."
Hades wished to respect the judges and not assume where they would send Elias. It was possible that due to the child's trauma, he would go to Elysium to heal before transitioning to Asphodel, which meant he would have to drink from the Lethe. The thought made him feel torn. While he would rather Elias exist in the underworld without the pain of missing his mother, he also did not want the child to forget their friendship. After a long silence, Rhadamanthus finally said,
"He shall have his home in Asphodel."
Hades released his breath.
"Thank you, judges."
Hades gathered his magic and teleported himself, Persephone, and Elias to Asphodel. When they appeared in the middle of the crowded street, the souls cheered, welcoming Elias to his new home. Hades attempted to lower him, but he held on tighter, refusing to let his feet touch the ground.
"Don't leave me," he said.
Hades straightened and looked into the child's eyes.
"I will never leave you, young one. You are home in my realm. You can see me whenever you want."
The boy's tiny hands twisted into his robes, and he rested his head against Hades' chest. He felt Persephone's eyes on him, and when he met her gaze, her expression was gentle and loving. He shrugged a little and kept his arms around the boy.
"Lady Persephone!"
The children of the underworld bounded toward his lover, hanging onto the skirts of her robes.
"Play with us!"
She laughed, her voice like silver bells. Hades loved it.
"All right, I shall come, but you all must promise to be good for your guardians," she said.
"Promise?"
She was met with a resounding,
"Promise!"
Persephone looked at Hades and Elias.
"Do you want to come?"
The young boy shook his head. Hades was not surprised. It was his first day in the underworld. He was still afraid and sad, and he missed his mother.
"I will be here when you are finished."
Persephone offered a small smile, and Hades watched as she wrangled the children, asking them to hold.
"What game will we play?"
she asked them as they departed for the emerald fields of Asphodel.
"Tag!"
"Hide and seek!"
"Hopscotch!"
Hades found himself grinning. When he had challenged Persephone to create life in the underworld, he never imagined she would make herself at home so quickly among his people. She'd defended them and fought for them, and in turn they worshipped her. In the time they had been apart or fighting, his realm hadn't felt the same. Thinking about it now made his chest tighten and his throat feel tight. Her absence was a miasma of melancholy he never wanted to experience again. He watched Persephone until she was no longer in sight. Then he turned with the boy in his arms and headed into the maze of obsidian homes.
"Where are we going?" Elias asked.
"I have someone special for you to meet," Hades replied.
a friend of mine.
The boy said nothing, and Hades carried on in silence, finally coming to a house on the outskirts of Asphodel. It was a newer home, having been assembled only in the last few months. Hades did not approach to knock, because the soul who lived there had come outside. He was an older man, and he wore jean coveralls and a plaid shirt. His face was made of folds and fine wrinkles, a well-worn map of his life written on his skin. "Eliath?" the old man asked. He spoke with a lisp because he was missing teeth. At the sound of his name, the boy's head popped up and he turned, wriggling to be freed from Hades' hold.
"Papa!"
The god released the child and he took off toward his grandfather.
His papa hobbled and the two met in the middle, embracing one another. Hades observed the reunion, feeling a pang in his chest, a storm of frustration and jealousy. And as it began to grow, he reminded himself of something Hecate had said. Good things do come out of death. And as he watched Elias with his grandfather, he felt the truth of those words in his soul. He started to turn. He needed distance from this scene. It had inspired too many emotions within him, a darkness he needed to unleash.
Wait!
He paused and turned to find Elias running to him. The boy threw his arms around Hades' legs and buried his face into his robes.
Don't go,
he said, his voice muffled. Hades took the child by the shoulders and knelt before him.
I won't be far, he said, and I will visit often.
You promise?
I promise,
Hades said and smiled.
We'll play goldfish as often as you like.
It was the first time the boy smiled since coming to the underworld. Hades straightened, mussing the boy's curls. As he did, he met the grandfather's gaze.
Thank you, he said, his voice trembling. Thank you, my lord.
Hades nodded and vanished. Chapter 2. A Guilt Like Torture. Hades teleported to a part of Tartarus that looked like a sterile medical facility. It was a new addition that contained several sensory deprivation chambers and other modern torture methods. It was disguised as one of many mountains encompassed by the fiery Phlegethon River. There were few methods of torture Hades wouldn't try. Ancient, medieval, modern. It didn't matter so long as it was effective. He was here because he needed to rid himself of this anger raging inside him. He felt guilty for leaving Asphodel because he had told Persephone he would wait for her, but he could not stay there any longer. Welcoming Elias into the underworld had been unexpected in a multitude of ways, and that included the feelings his presence had unearthed. Anger, jealousy, and fear. They were dark feelings that swirled in his chest and fed his fury. He had fucked up. He had failed to communicate to Persephone an important reality for them when she became his wife. He would never be able to give her children. It was a path the fates had unwoven for him. A sacrifice he had made without thought or feeling because he had come to see family as something unattainable. Until Persephone. His heart and lungs felt tangled as he wrangled with his guilt. She deserved to know. How many times would she have to tell him that before he listened? Or worse, before she decided he wasn't worth her time? Hades took a breath and turned his thoughts to torture, making his way down the white hall, passing several windowless white doors. Each one was a cell, and each cell contained a soul sentenced to exist in a room void of color, sound, and smell. The effect was psychological, and often left those exposed to it unable to sleep, speak, and in immense pain. Hades entered a door on the left where he had sentenced Pirithous, the man who had been obsessed with and kidnapped Persephone. It was another instance when his lover had vanished and he could not sense her. When he'd discovered she was missing, he'd immediately unleashed the Furies to find her. When he found her, he was relieved that she had been able to protect herself,
but hearing of Pirithous' intentions had enraged him. He'd brought the soul back to life, so he would have to live with the pain of his wounds before sentencing him to the White Room. Hades visited often, taking out his rage upon the demigod, especially after he'd returned from investigating his home and discovered he'd been stalking Persephone, taking pictures of her, writing things about her that filled him with a fury so acute he'd lost his hold on his glamour. When he'd returned to the underworld that evening, he went straight to Tartarus and beat his face into a pulp. Pirithous had died again that night, and Hades brought him back to life with that severed face, letting him choke on his own blood. He took pleasure in restoring Pirithous' appearance over and over again just to destroy it. The process was slowly making him feel better. When Hades entered the room, he found the semi-divine man sitting in a white metal chair. His arms hung at his sides, and his eyes were closed. His chin fell against his chest. He was dead again. "Wake up," Hades said, and the man obeyed. And when he met Hades' gaze, he began to sob.
"Please."
Normally, Hades would command him to silence, but he wanted the man to beg, because hearing him plead for leniency enraged him, which meant a more severe punishment for Pirithous.
"Why should I show you mercy?" Hades asked. "You are a predator. You tried to rape my lover."
"I didn't mean anything by it. I swear. I swear."
"How did you not mean the words you spoke?" Hades asked, and he quoted Pirithous because he knew it would fuel his rage. "You'll like it, I promise. You won't even think about him when I am finished."
"They're only words."
"And your actions?" he asked. "You touched her, forced her legs apart."
"You cannot punish me forever for one mistake."
Hades laughed darkly and summoned a sledgehammer from thin air. He twisted the handle in his hands.
"Challenge accepted, mortal." Then he swung.
Hades teleported to his office and headed straight for his bar, pouring himself a glass of whiskey. As he brought it to his lips, Persephone spoke.
"Where have you been?" she asked. "You said you would wait for me."
He paused and turned to her, and her appearance was like a strike to the face. She was so damn beautiful. She'd changed since returning to the palace, and now wore white robes. The material was thin, and he noted the sharp peaks of her breasts and the soft curves of her hips. Her eyes were searching, and he knew when she saw the blood smeared on his skin, because she returned her gaze to his, eyes narrowed.
"You went to Tartarus?"
"I did," he said.
"Why?"
She was suspicious because she knew what it meant for him to go. It meant that he was raging. It meant that something had set him off. He wasn't proud of it, this dark need to torture when he could not control his anger. But she had lived through it after Pirithous because she'd asked to participate in the torture. She hadn't known what she was getting into. "Do you want children?" Hades asked.
Persephone blanched, and her mouth fell open. To her, the question had come out of nowhere, but Hades didn't feel like he had the luxury of waiting to bring this up.
I don't know. I love children, but I...
"I cannot give you children," he said and downed the whiskey.
He looked at the glass and threw it hard against the wall, where it shattered. He thrust his fingers through his hair, releasing it from its loose tie.
"I cannot have them. I should have told you sooner, but I am a fucking coward, and I thought something would change."
He couldn't look at her as he spoke. He feared her expression, feared what he would see beneath it. He continued.
"I asked you to marry me, and I didn't tell you that. And for that, I am sorry. If you want out, I understand."
He waited for her rejection in the silence that followed. But she let the quiet sit, let it twist into his pores, into his bloodstream, and suffocate his organs. He gave in and looked at her.
"Are you finished suffering?" she asked.
He furrowed his brow, unsure of her meaning. She started toward him.
I wish she would have told me sooner, she said,
and Hades was aware of how painful his heart beat.
It would have kept you from agonizing over this.
His eyes widened.
I do not know if I want children, she said. Maybe I will, and if so, we will cross that bridge together. Right now, I know I want you. I agreed to marry you because I love you, and for no other reason.
Hades shook his head. She was inches from him now. He noted the dust of freckles on her nose and cheeks, and he could smell her magic, taste it on his tongue, sweet like honey and vanilla. It made his mouth water. You could change your mind. What if you start to resent
Hades?
She said his name to quiet him and pressed her fingers to his lips.
You have made this about me when it is really about you.
She paused, studying him, and in her eyes he saw something akin to grief as she spoke.
I think you want to be a father.
His eyes burned, frustration and sadness warring inside him. He clasped her hand in his and kissed her fingertips, pulling them away from his mouth. I made a deal, he admitted in a low voice, and lost the right to be a father.
Persephone's brows drew together. What do you mean?
A soul for a soul, Hades answered. That doesn't mean they have to exist yet. I chose to save a mortal child, and the fates demanded my own.
The memory came unbidden to the forefront of his mind. A baby cradled in the arms of a weeping mother.
When he had looked at her soul, he saw a woman burdened by grief. This was not the first child she had lost. When she had begged for the child's life, Hades couldn't say no.
And you agreed?
The pitch of her voice changed, rising with her outrage. I saw no reason to refuse, he said. You did not exist then.
There must be something we can do, she said,
and Hades found himself smiling sadly. It was her instinct to solve problems, but this one was not to be. The fates are greater than gods, Persephone. They control the destiny of mortals and the destiny of the gods.
Then we will bargain.
No, he snapped. Her eyes widened with shock, and he lowered his voice, brushing his thumb across her cheek. No, Persephone, you were right. We will cross that bridge together when you are ready. He kissed her, his lips sweeping gently over hers. She was warm and soft and comforting, and his body responded immediately. His length thickened between them, pressing into the bottom of her stomach. He groaned, suppressing the urge to draw her to the floor and fuck her. He broke the kiss and met her emerald eyes. Join me in the bath. His clothes and skin were stained with blood, and this day felt heavy. He wanted to wash it away and lose himself in her. When she nodded, Hades felt the knots in his chest loosen. He drew her tight against him and teleported to the baths, only he took her to a smaller, round pool, where the water was dark and the walls shimmered with luminous tiles and candlelight. When they appeared, he kissed her again, and his hands moved from her waist to her shoulders, and he drew the sleeves of her robes down her arms, exposing her breasts. They were soft and filled his hands as he squeezed them, the tips of her nipples coming to sharp points beneath his fingers. When her hands pressed against his chest, he broke the kiss. He thought she might tell him no, but her eyes were heavy-lidded and clouded with desire. My queen, he asked.
Your clothes, she said. Take them off.
He obeyed while Persephone wiggled her robes over her lush hips until they puddled on the floor. She held his gaze and strolled past him, snatching a washcloth from a stack near the wall. She entered the water like a siren of the sea, luring him, seducing him with her grace as she swam into the middle of the pool. Hades entered the warm water. It smelled like lavender, like Persephone's hair. And as he approached her, she commanded him again.
Stop,
she said. He paused. The water came to his calves. He stood rigid, bare before her, and her bright eyes touched every part of him. His cock strained and his balls ached. He wanted to be inside her, moving, filling her so full of himself she could hardly breathe. His hands fisted at his sides.
Will you make me chase you?
He asked. She smirked, and Hades' eyes dipped, watching the water lap at her breasts. He wanted to take each nipple into his mouth and hear her moan his name. The sound would spur him, and he would sit her on the edge of the pool, gloriously wet and glowing, part her thighs and tease her with his tongue until she came against his mouth. Her voice brought him back, low and husky.
No, but I would like to bathe you.
He raised a brow. If she knew his thoughts, she wouldn't tease him. Still, he agreed and answered, "Only if you are thorough." He liked the darkness that clouded her eyes as she approached him. She was aroused, and he knew if he touched her, if he thrust his fingers inside her, she would be swollen and slick. Fuck. She started on his chest, passing the cloth over his neck and collarbones and shoulders. As she worked, she would pause to trace his bones and muscles, press kisses to his skin. When her strokes reached his waist and she grazed his cock, he groaned and wrapped his arm around her waist, bringing them flush together.
"You test my resilience, my queen," he said.
His lips brushed hers, and he spoke.
"What makes you think you have to resist?"
Her lips pressed hard against his, and he growled, moving backward until he sat on the steps that led into the pool. He drew Persephone to him, her thighs braced on either side of him, her core pressed into his aching length. His hands moved from her hips up her ribcage and found her breasts. He squeezed and kneaded, kissed and sucked them until her hips began to grind against him. She rose, and he positioned the head of his cock against her, groaning as she impaled herself. She fit him like a glove, and she was warm and wet, and he wanted to feel her deeper. She leaned back, treating him to a view of her breasts as she rose and fell upon him, clenching around him, milking him, until he came inside her. She collapsed against his chest, and he held her close, leaning back against the steps of the pool. They dug uncomfortably into his back, but he didn't care. He would stay like this forever, inside her, cradling her, loving her. After a moment, she spoke, her head cradled into the crook of his neck. He could feel her lips move against his skin.
"I think seeing you with Elias made me fall in love with you more."
Hades chuckled.
"I shocked you, I am sure."
"You did," she said,
and he felt her smile.
"You went from asking me how to speak to the souls to embracing one. And now I cannot help seeing you as a father one day. I cannot help thinking, wanting to have your children, even if I am not ready now."
He swallowed hard, imagining her as a mother. It wasn't difficult, because she was already so caring, so compassionate. He cleared his throat.
"Perhaps the fates will weave a new path."
Persephone pushed away a little to look at him. She was achingly beautiful, her skin flushed with warmth.
"Has that been done before?"
she asked.
"Yes."
He studied her, drinking in her loving expression.
"You were not always woven into my destiny."
Her eyes flashed, and he could tell she had questions, but he did not want to talk right now. Enough time had passed, and his cock strained against her leg, eager for more. He growled when Persephone's hand clasped it, stroking him from root to tip, and she smiled.
"Eager for me, my lord?"
she whispered, using his words.
"Starved, my queen."
He brushed his nose against hers, and then kissed her as he rose to his feet and teleported to his bedchamber.
This concludes A Touch of Ruin by Scarlett St. Clair, narrated by Meg Sylvan. Copyright 2020 by Scarlett St. Clair. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Scarlett St. Clair and was produced in the year 2020 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.